wird uns heute etwas sagen über Apache Mahut. Sie ist Mitinitiatorin dieses Projekts und beschäftigt sich seit wie lange dazu? Seit einem Jahr?
Also das Projekt gibt es seit einem Jahr, aber Machine Learning ist bei mir schon ein bisschen länger ein Thema.
Damit ist auch schon vorweggegriffen, worum es geht. Es steht auch da, es geht um Machine Learning und in dem speziellen Fall um eine skalierbare Lösung im Dach, unter dem Dach von Apache. Viel Spaß.
Okay. Mal vorneweg, der Talk war auf Englisch angekündigt. Ist ja irgendjemand dabei? English, please? Okay, no problem.
Okay, sorry then for not letting it be.
Okay, thank you for the introduction. Just to repeat a little bit, so welcome to my talk on Apache Mahut. It is a project that will bring machine learning to industrial strengths. What I mean with industrial strengths, we will see in a few minutes. Who is Isabel Trost? I'm currently working for Neophonie, a Berlin-based company that is dealing with building search solutions. So if you have a problem and want to have a customized search engine, you come to us and then we will do our best. But Apache Mahut is what I do in my free time, so it's not really related to what Neophonie does. Okay, what will we see today? I will first tell you what machine learning is all about, what is all this fuss about machine learning for. Then I will come to the mission of Mahut, why should we go scalable and how will we do this. And after that we will get to work. I will show you very briefly three pretty simple algorithms that show what can be done. And after that we come to the fun part, that is a whole lot of example applications that can be built on top of the algorithms. So why do we need some scalable machine learning, data mining, text mining algorithms? Well, I think it is pretty clear that we all have a lot of data at our fingertips. A few of you may be developers of open source projects, and if you think to what you actually gather, like you have a lot of mailing list archives that contain messages, so you could think of building a system that reads these messages and automatically identifies new emerging sub-projects, new emerging ideas, communities within your developers. Or you could think about your source control logs. You certainly have something like SVN running. What do you get from there? You get check-in messages, you get lists of files that have been modified, you get the lines that have been modified, and in many cases you also have links back to your bug tracking system, so you can draw links from software that has been modified to the bugs that the modification was related to. Or think about the traffic on your web server. You certainly log a lot of traffic data and you could try to identify common user groups, like distinguish users of your software as opposed to developers, as opposed to, I don't know, people who want to give you money for your project. But to do all these interesting, to do all these tasks, you need a means to deal with a lot of data. Like source control logs, they can in pretty short time explode into very large dimensions. So you need a means to process all this data. But what is machine learning essentially? We can have a look back into history, what scientists have done. Usually nature-generated data, in this case, nature just lets the bathtub overflow when Archimedes stepped into it. Archimedes, as a scientist, watched nature and generated a model for that. What does machine learning do? Basically exactly the same. Nature generates data. In our case, let it be spam emails or let it be books, let it be source control logs. Machine learning goes there, serves the data, and builds a model for the data. Nothing else. So the only problem is, usually data sets are really huge. We could go for a very simple solution and use only a sample of the data. But there's a problem that we run into and that is that we don't use all information within the data. So we might leave out interesting data points, and we might not see all the patterns that we are interested in. Solution two is simply use all the data. But the problem we now have is it takes far too long on one machine, even if you use optimized algorithms. So our solution, the solution of Mahout, is use multiple machines and do as much computation in parallel as possible. How do we want to do this? At Apache, there is a project named Hadoop. Anyone familiar with Hadoop? Hey, great. So what does Hadoop do? Google thought up this pretty cool framework called MapReduce. With MapReduce, you can pretty easily write parallel programs and run them on clusters. And Hadoop is basically the open source implementation of the MapReduce model. It comes with a distributed file system, and it comes with the way of computing algorithms in a distributed way. What Mahout does is simply build on top of this library and profit from the framework. So currently we focus on Hadoop, but if anyone comes along and says, this algorithm is so great, but I can't parallelize it in this context of Hadoop, then you're welcome to do it in another way. Okay, so a little history. How did it all begin? It was like in summer 2007, so only like 1 year ago, that a few crazy developers felt the need for scalable machine learning. Those developers mostly came from the Lucene communities, that is from, they were people building search engines and dealing with a lot of text data. We built up a mailing list after just a few days and set up a wiki page and started building up a project plan. And it didn't take very long, like only half a year, that we had a rather large community. So without a name, without a logo, without any huge organization in our back, there were already scientists interested in what we were doing, there were Apache people, and there were other people interested. So like at the end of January this year, we thought, okay, it's time to launch. Think up a name, put up a proposal, and there we go. And well, today we are here. Who are we? It's mostly Lucene people. It's like David Weiss, for instance, is concerned with clustering search results. So you go to a search engine, issue your query, you get back a lot of search snippets, and his algorithm extracts the most significant terms that are related to this topic from the snippets. Then there are a whole lot of Lucene people involved. There's one guy who professionally runs a video search site that recommends videos. Okay, so let's have a look at what are machine learning tasks. Basically, you can classify the tasks as supervised, unsupervised, and semi-supervised. What is supervised? You have like your data set that you would want to train your algorithm on, and each data point has a label. Say you have 100 emails, each email has a label like is ham and is spam. And from that data set, you can learn characteristics of spam mails versus ham mails. Pretty easy. Then you have unsupervised learning tasks. In this case, your algorithm doesn't get any labels. Like say you have a lot of news messages and you just want to group them by similarity. Say you want to put messages that are topically related together. And then there are algorithms that can benefit from data sets that have labels, like in the spam ham case, but also have a huge set of unlabeled data. Like you have your 100 labeled emails and you just throw in 1,000 emails which you didn't tag as spam and ham, and the algorithm still gets better. Okay, see ya. The example here would be classification. Like in your mail client, you usually have some classification algorithm to identify your email messages as spam and ham. Unsupervised, one example would be clustering, where you just group data points by similarity. Okay, let's get to a pretty easy template for machine learning. How does it work? First of all, you gather the data. That's easy. You just go to your mailing list archive and you get some messages. But then comes it's a little bit harder. You have to transform your data to a form that is understandable for your machine. Just a stream of letters doesn't really help. So you need to extract features and characteristics of your emails that help helps the computer understand the email. After that, you need to choose an algorithm that is appropriate for your problem. So depending on what results you expect, you need another algorithm. After that, you need to, each algorithm usually has a lot of parameters to tune. Like for some clustering algorithms, you first need to tell how many topics you want to identify. In the classification case, you may be able to say, okay, I'm fine with getting spam mails in my inbox, but I absolutely don't want any ham mails in my spam folder. So you might want to tune those parameters. And finally, in the end, you just combine the features, the parameters, and the algorithm, and you have your solution. Usually, transforming the data to a machine-understandable form means generating features, getting feature vectors. You may find tasks like feature selection in this subtask. Feature selection means finding characteristics that are really significant to help solve your problem. Then for choosing an appropriate algorithm, usually for one task, there's a whole bunch of algorithms that are at your disposal, but there is no single best like classification algorithm that works for each and every problem. You need to do this step of choosing your algorithm each time again for each new sort of data. And of course, you need to evaluate how good your parameters were. So let's come to three example problem settings. Say for clustering, you have a huge amount of emails like Debian mailing lists. What you want to find out is how many topics are in these mailing lists. Like if you have one pretty general mailing list, there are still clusters of mails that deal with one topic, like one emerging release or new emerging hardware or whatever. We already have a few algorithms in our library. They are still pretty easy to implement, but have found quite some use in industry. Like K-means, we have Canopy clustering, we have MeanShift, we have some hierarchical algorithms. For this example, we want to look at K-means. Okay, according to our template, what do we have to do? We need to gather the emails, it's just downloading them. Second step, we need to find a way for generating a vector of mail properties. What can we think of what is significant for describing an email? There might be things like a mailing list, you might think of the length of the email, or you might even want to parse the text and generate one feature for each word that occurred in the mails. And finally, you need to just apply some clustering algorithms. Okay, let's have a closer look at step two. We want to generate one feature for each word that we saw. So what comes out of it is a huge vector. Each of these entries in the vector represents one word, like from Edward up to zero, like Frostcon, like zero, whatever. And if you have a mail, what you do is just have a look at the mail and write one into each entry where you have seen a word. Or you can go and simply write a number that corresponds to how often you saw the word. Or you can even weight the number of occurrences with how important you consider the word to be. What you end up with is a very huge high-dimensional vector. And so finally, each mail is a data point in a very high-dimensional space. What clustering now does, or what K-means does, is simply look into the space and group those emails together that are close to each other. The definition of close is, it depends on your use case and depends on what you like. Okay. Let's have a look at how this looks like. In this case, we have a very simple feature representation. We have just a two-dimensional vector because I'm pretty much unable to write like a million dimensions on this slide. We have a few emails. We have one cluster of email here and one here. At the beginning, we don't have them colored as blue and red, so we don't know the clusters, but that is what I would expect, because I see like they are pretty much together and they are pretty much close to each other. How does k-means work? Pretty easy. We say we want two clusters. That is a parameter we need to give to the algorithm. The algorithm starts out with just randomly throwing the cluster centers into this space. After that, in a second step, the algorithm assigns the data points to the cluster center that is closest to some. Closeness in this case could be like the angle between the two data points. They are vectors, so you can just compute the angle, or you could use some Euclidean distance or something that you like. In the second step, we just recompute the cluster centers. In this case, we just average all the data points that have been assigned to one cluster. Again, in the next step, we reassign the data points to these cluster centers, again to the one that is closest, and there we are with our final cluster assignments.
And that works if you pick the first point random any time?
It is guaranteed to converge, but it so what you do with this algorithm is you repeat the computation of your cluster centers again and again, and the assignments again and again, and the algorithm is guaranteed to converge to a stable solution. It might
be one cluster or two clusters identical. I mean, those two points can lead to the same cluster.
Yes, that is.
It's not so very.
Usually you would restart a cluster algorithm not just once, but with two initialization points. And what you have just mentioned, like initialize it randomly, that is a pretty trivial strategy that might not be the best in every case. So, wait a minute, I can, right. So there are a few optimizations to this trivial version, and the definition of the starting points is one of them. You don't need to make it random, but you can make an informed decision where to start. Another idea what you can think of is the definition of the cluster center. It doesn't need to be the mean of these points that have been assigned, but it can also be a specific email message that is central to the cluster, or it can be anything else that you can think of. The next point where you can tweak the algorithm is the definition of what actually makes points close to each other. Like you can define your distance metrics. And of course, what is open to your choosing is how to represent objects in as feature vectors. Like you can use words, you can use mailing, the length of the mail, you can use, like if you think of identifying email spam, there are usually images at the end of the spam messages, so you can include characteristics of these images, whatever you like. And last but not least, k-means is trivial. It's trivial to implement, trivial to understand, but it's not necessarily the best algorithm for each solution, so you can look into other algorithms that are also supported by Mahout. What you do for evaluation, whether the algorithm is okay for your problem, is usually you have a gold standard. Gold standard is you pay a bunch of people. In research, it's often students to hand label the data points and say these are close together, and then you can just see whether the algorithm works. Okay. how can we distribute the thing? That's a really interesting part, like if you don't want to run it on one machine. In this case, it's rather trivial. We can distribute the phase where you assign clusters to points to clusters, and you can do this in parallel. And of course, you can do the recomputation of cluster centers in parallel, where you use as many cluster nodes as you have groups and topics found. Okay. So next task would be like classification. What is classification? You start out, you want to build a search engine. That's what my employer does every time. But this time you don't want to index all pages, but just the pages of your favorite topic. Say you want to index only pages on free software. What you can do is build a classification algorithm that identifies pages that are on free software versus pages that are on general topics. Algorithms we have partly planned, partly already in it. In Mahout are naive Bayes, are logistic regression and support vector machines, but there are more to come. According to the template, how does it work? Again, we gather web pages. This time we need to pay our student to manually assign labels off-topic and on-topic to the web pages. We don't need to do this with all the pages we crawled, but just with some random sample. Again, we need to generate vectors for each web page, like pass the text, again, like before we see email messages, we can use the length of the web page, URL or host or whatever you can think of. After that, we have in next step for training the classification algorithm based on the labeled data that we generated here. And after that, we can use this trained algorithm to classify new incoming web pages. Okay, again, we have this schema of representing web pages. It's pretty much clear. What the classifier does is just learn which properties are relevant for your topic. Like FrostCon might be relevant, or like FSFE might be relevant, but Alpha might not be that relevant to your favorite topic, free software. Okay, a pretty simple algorithm that is currently used by many client email programs for classifying ham and spam mails is naive Bayes. What you do is simply for each label count, how often did you see the term or the words in the, or for each label you use, you count how often did you see terms in data points that belong to this class. Then you simply create a model that represents labels and feature counts and that you can reuse. And for the distributed version, it's pretty easy. You can do for each data point, you can do the counting of the word occurrences in parallel. Of course, here again, you have a few points where you can tweak the algorithm. You can tweak how you represent your web pages as feature vectors. You can use only the text. You can use the pictures. You can use links pointing to the web page, whatever you can think of. Then optimization is which subset do you select for assigning labels to beforehand? Like how representative is this set of pre-labeled data? And last but not least, again, like K-means was naive Bayes, of course, is easy but not necessarily the best. So there are a lot of other algorithms that might fit your task better. So again, in this, also here in the optimization part, you have features to tune, you have parameters to tune, and you have your algorithm to choose that fits your problem. Okay, so let's have a look at a last problem, that is recommendation mining. Pretty early on, there were people from SwissForge working on the TASTE project that was concerned with creating recommendations for items, and they approached us we were talking together, and the end of the discussion was that JAST was integrated into Mahout and is now developed by the whole Mahout community as well as the JAST people, and wants to go parallel as well. So what is an example setting for this learning task? You have a video sharing website, and of course you have terabytes of log data. You know which user watched which video. You may know any ratings assigned to the video. You may know properties of the videos, like actors or genre or whatever. What you want is you want to recommend videos to other users. How can you do this? Again, you gather the interaction logs of the web page. You may want to generate vectors from additional information you have about users or you have about videos. And then what you can do is, based on what the user already has seen and watched, recommend videos that are similar to those, or based on what other people watched, recommend videos that have been watched by people that are similar to the user. So it's basically what Amazon does. That would be books are similar to what you are currently buying, and that would be people who bought this book also liked the other one. Again, there are a lot of points for optimizing this setup. You can use video ratings. Sometimes people just put some stars assigned to videos. You can find additional video information, what I already mentioned, like actors and genre and other things. And of course, you can use implicit user feedback, where the user doesn't check the stars besides the video, but you just evaluate how often did he watch the video, how long did he stay on the site, did he do any recommendations himself, did he send any links and stuff like that. Again, for the user-user similarity, the definition is up to you. And again, the definition for video similarity is up to you and depends on what you know about your users and about your data. Okay, so Mahout goals, what do we want to reach? We want to basically provide libraries that supports most of the very common learning tasks. That is, we want to provide algorithms for clustering. We are providing algorithms for classification. We already have integrated stuff for recommendation mining. And we want to support some other tasks as well. After only like 2 or 3 months, there already were quite a few people who wanted to help us. Basically as part of the Google Summer of Code. So what I thought was especially interesting was that these people usually didn't come alone, but they had some people at their university backing them up and helping them. So usually our people have 2 advisors, like one from the project, so it helps them understand the Apache way, understand how submitting patches works and how working with the source code works. And there's usually one guy from university who supports them understanding the algorithms and who has an interest in Mahout in terms of using the library for his own purposes. Okay, now let's come to the fun part. I have collected a few applications, a few web pages, and I want to show you which parts of these pages and applications contain machine learning algorithms in them. Of course, you know these access log patterns from web servers. What you can do here is you have an input that's files containing server access logs. What you can do is find user groups that are interested in the same topics. And you can create specialized web pages for them. You can adjust your navigation rules to observations like people who visit Debian pages and MacBook pages might also visit the Refit pages. or you can show different sites to potential developers as opposed to users seeking help. So far, a lot is done manually, but the analysis should be pretty much automatable. A second application would be clustering news articles. You probably know Google News. What you can do is you gather incoming news messages and you group them. News messages that are similar to each other fall into one category. And that way, if you do it automatically, you can identify emerging hot topics, like in this case, Olympics and the elections in the US. Of course, you all are aware of spam filtering solutions. And here, machine learning algorithms are faced with a few additional problems, like spam mails change over time. If you install a filter and it becomes pretty common, then spammers will adapt to it. They will modify the text of the messages. They will insert images containing their message. And in addition, what is spam for me might be ham for you. So if you are a free email provider, you have a pretty hard time building one classifier for all users. And of course, usually I'm not willing to give labels to my spam messages, especially not to my provider. Okay, where else can you use machine learning? We've already seen we want to recommend videos. We want to provide ratings for videos that are not yet rated. So we might infer these ratings from the usage. We might want to categorize the content automatically. We might want to build a recommender for RSS feeds. So imagine you have a huge list of RSS feeds that you're using or reading during the week, but you don't want to discover new feeds that you're interested in. Especially you don't want to pass 100 new web pages and blogs. So you go there, tell the solution, these are my feeds, I like them, just get me the latest and the greatest from the web. You can do the same for papers. Imagine your average researcher who is pretty occupied with what he does, and he has a list of papers that he likes, he has a list of papers that he didn't like, and he has a list of papers that he wrote. Based on these papers and based on what has been published on current conferences, you can recommend new papers that are relevant. Okay, you can provide debugging help. I already mentioned the fact that usually you have check-in patterns from your source control management system, and you can correlate them with your bug tracking system. So usually the check-in messages also contain the number of the bugs that was fixed. What you can do, you can mark pieces that were usually edited together. So you can build engines that say, like, people who usually edited this class also touched these and this package and there they did something. Or you can go and mark pieces that are especially prone to bugs. So like this method was changed a lot of times, but every time it was changed, there was nothing afterwards. But each time someone changed this method, some people had to go there afterwards and fix bugs that were introduced. So you can identify bug-prone methods and inform the user, like with these green and red bars, to be especially careful in the lower method. There already are Eclipse plugins that are doing this. They were developed in Saarbrücken. Or you can go and analyze viruses to predict drug resistances, like in this case the HIV virus. Or you can go and make job search easier. You can, again, spider the web, get a lot of web pages, and then simply build a classifier that identifies job postings on the web. So you let your crawler go, and you simply filter out all those pages that contain job postings. After that, of course, you want to automatically extract where the job is, what the job title is, what the people applying need to do to get there, what the latest date for application is. And of course you want to group these jobs by categories, like by region or by what people have to do or by position. Then you can go and identify intrusion detection patterns. What do you do? You have several log files, you have several logs for normal users, and of course you have logs for detected attacks. And you can go and build a solution that, given the logs, alerts the user in case someone attacks the web server, for instance. Then you can go and learn the perfect ranking algorithm. Well, in a perfect world, that would be. As an input, you have user votings for search results. As an input, you have clicks on search results. Like, if you go to Google and you don't click on the first and on the second link, but on the third link, what you implicitly say is the first and the second one weren't as relevant to me as the third one. So from this implicit feedback, you can learn new search rankings. And again, you can use query refinement logs. Like someone goes to Google and searches for open source, after that he searches for Debian, after that he searches for, I don't know, free software. So and these queries are somehow related and can be used later on for generating a better ranking. And the task of course would be to create a perfect search engine. Then you can go and aggregate information on people. There are a lot of social networking pages out there. There are regular search engines that you can use. And the task to solve would be, given some person, find new information about this person, or given a company, find new information about this company. Some obvious problems that you need to solve with this, if you want to create this site, is there are a lot of like Heinz Meier people in Germany. So you need to disambiguate the people and the information on the people. Or another task would be you have a handwritten text that you cannot read, and you just give it to the machine and say, convert it to a, for me, readable form. So what we see with our project is that we are still at the beginning. So there is a high demand for scalable machine learning, but there are several libraries that do machine learning out there, but none of them is focused to go really large scale. And that is what our goal is. And of course we need you. We need your enthusiasm. We need your mathematical knowledge. Because if you have a look at machine learning papers, then it's usually 8 pages, and you don't find a page where no formulas in there. So you need to understand them before you implement the stuff. We need your proficiency, or you're willing to learn Hadoop, or we need your experience with your favorite parallelization framework. And of course, we need your interest in understanding your data. So if you are not willing to implement anything, or if you don't understand the algorithms, you still can come to the mailing list and tell us about your problem. So we are always interested in people who have interesting problems that are only waiting to be solved. Okay, finally some advertising. There's going to be a Hadoop meeting and a combined Hadoop, Mahout, whatever meeting in Germany. That is in Berlin at the 8th of September at 5 p.m. It'll be in the center of Berlin at the New Thinking Store. And, well, I hope to see you there for some interesting talks, for some beer, and, of course, for interesting discussions on parallel machine learning. So thanks for your attention. Any questions? No questions? Ah, there's one.
Can you tell us anything about like how Google do it, how you do it, what advancements they're making? I know it's all top secret, but I guess you can guess some of the directions they're going in.
I had some examples, like for the news clustering stuff, but of course no one really knows what's going on inside there. But one pretty common agreement is that you benefit from using a lot of data. So in the machine learning community, it's usually such that you have small data sets and you build highly sophisticated algorithms that have a very long runtime, but that learn pretty sophisticated patterns. What you observe if you have a huge amount of data is that these algorithms don't scale anymore. So what you can do is either use a subsample, use the algorithm, or you can try to use all the data and use a simpler algorithm that you can parallelize. What you observe is that the latter usually leads to better results. The question was whether there's any plan to put results into either Z libraries or Solr. And there are a lot of people from Solr in our community. And so there's pretty high interaction between both communities. So actually the reason for some people to found this project was that Solr needed several algorithms, that Lucene needed some algorithms, that the same need was with Nudge. And I think there will definitely be some...
maybe?
Yes. So actually what I forgot to mention is there is another Apache project that's called UEMA. So that is for analyzing text. So you put text into it. UEMA. UIMA. So it comes from IBM. It's still an incubator project. And what you can do with it, you give it a piece of text. It processes the text and annotates the text. So it's a pipeline where you can put into your favorite text processes and you can annotate it with those are named entities, like people or companies, and in the next processor you can annotate it with this is an object, this is a verb, this is your favorite word form, and after that you can do some other fancy stuff. And the idea would be to use this as pre-processing for Lucene or Solr, like for tokenization and for annotation and stuff like that. And I could perfectly imagine that you could use Mahout libraries within this framework for annotation, like for named entity recognition or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you need, you are hitting this scalability issue as the main goal. There might be a lot of people who don't have the clusters in their background. Are you thinking about anything like, city at home client style clients that people could use if they want to distribute their machine learning and
share stuff?
Participation of the user community with internet accessible computers.
We didn't think of city at home, but there's something like EC2 at Amazon. So for very cheap money, you can buy computation time, but it's really not that expensive. So as a private person, you can go there. And Hadoop actually runs on top of EC2. So you can use their infrastructure. And I think there will be other cloud computing resources to come in the near future.
But truly private peer-to-peer you haven't thought about?
Not yet, no. And currently we are also just parallelizing on top of Hadoop. So everywhere where Hadoop runs, our stuff runs.
Yes.
So that's the basic idea. Well, thank you.